playing around with the thoughts. Ken asked me to speak over at Circle.
Oh.
Well, this Sunday, so the last thing that was running through my head I put out there. Only human? Dot, dot, dot. Really? Question mark?
Did they give you a particular theme or context for that?
They just asked me. They asked me for a bio and they asked me for what to what I wanted to talk about. And interestingly enough, Ken said it might be refreshing to have someone talk in a more ordinary fashion as opposed to channeling and all that importance. And I said, good. I could do that.
Yeah.
So I really, ironically tapped what's naturally occurring in all of its, isness, whatever that is, just the human beingness without getting too caught up in, trying to make it something or not. So what it said the sub thing was exploring and cultivating the undefended life. I was going to say self, but then, one of the asked a wider net.
Yes.
And that includes things when they don't work out the way we think they should. Fit the way we think we should. We don't achieve like we think we should. Or this compulsion to evolve spiritually in some manner. So I'm just going to kind of like talk about the ordinary. Very ordinary today. Oh, I know what else I mentioned too. The two things in practice was meditation and inquiry.
Ah.
So.
Not channeling.
No, no. Not channeling, no.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Not channeling. At least not with another identity. What wants to be spoken?
You know, the vocabulary of conversation or inquiry or communion, transtemporal communion, changes profoundly and abruptly if we're not soliciting the attention or agreement of a person. Folks, it's fair to say, and overgeneralized always. Are, by habit and training, dedicated to reviewing their lives through the lens of the person. Events and circumstances, sentiment, emotion, likes and dislikes, failures and successes, magical tools to avoid pain and to attract what's desired. Messages and, exotic information from extraterrestrials and disembodied spirits and pets that have gone to the other side. So we are, we well up instantaneously, from a vantage point of the person. So most of the, you know, let's call it spiritual or new age or miracle speak that's going on is aimed at the person. You know, speakers that are coming to Pebble, let's say, in the ensuing weeks, if you look at their little bio snippets, you know, some of them have studied with Joe Dispenza, you know, from What the Bleep, and they may have suffered from serious healing or other kinds of deficits or challenges in their life, and then, you know, discovered a source of novelty and renewal that might have created, you know, a miraculous healing in body and spirit and mind. And so now these folks are winners. They came through, you know, some kind of dark night of the soul of one or other form, and through miraculous intervention, whether by virtue of their will or not, they came out ahead of the game. And these are the kinds of inspirations that we, the pedestrian and emotionally, spiritually downtrodden, love to hear. Because if that guy or woman can go through such a profound deficit and come out a cheery winner, well, why can't I? And, you know, once again, the motive, the anticipation, the interest is how can things turn out better for me to ameliorate insecurity, suffering, codependency, addiction, and become perhaps, you know, a published, world-traveling, inspirational speaker making deep six figures or more a year, which is the, right, the industry's goal for persons that are successful in winning out over the right challenges and ordinary nature of their lives. Just like the civilization suffers from population growth, economic growth, communications and technology growth, surveillance growth, so does the so-called individual ego suffer from that same urgency to be, to become more.
And the need to find a doctor to remove the growth. It's like,
good point.
I think my growth is replacing my vitality. Can it be removed?
Good point. So what if we were to, you know, suggest, explore a radical discontinuity with the familiarity of being the person? We can't continue to use the worn out vocabulary of the person to venture into transtemporal or transhuman sensitivities. The invitation, the mutation to shift from personal to not personal is exactly this. It's exactly now. It's the same apparent body of reality that we know, but we are willing, if not court-ordered, spiritually court-ordered, to discover it in a new
or sensational way?
Or less. Yeah, it's not trans-sensational, meaning, you know, beyond the what the senses tell us or how we interpret the senses, as another way of using the word sensational, right? Yeah. And, you know, even even remarkable perception can easily become an obstacle or fetish. Because remarkable perception, you know, stimulates the person, stimulates the sensuality of experiencing. I mean, even our spiritual superheroes, whether Judeo-Christian, you know, Hindu, Buddhist, Jain, what have you, are beloved by virtue of being, you know, mutant-like, extraordinary, whether Ramana Maharshi dwelling in a profound samadhi without eating, drinking, urinating, defecating, all the while being nibbled upon by insects and vermin to the point of open flesh sores, and not having a fucking clue that that was occurring. I mean, that's fucking mutantism. And so, you know, or, I mean, pick any of them. You know, what, Jesus walked on water. You know, he healed the sick. He turned water into wine. He repaired someone's ear without, you know, without asking for a shekel. He rose from the dead. I mean, can we just dumb it down on the hero worship, on the mutant worship?
You just reminded me of that the other phrase, a case of mistaken identity. It's like this profundity of presence does what it does, and we attribute it to the forms in which we experienced it.
Absolutely.
Oh, the orange robes and the cool-looking, you know, samadhi guy, or the smooth talking, fast-paced, you know, jet-setter, how to do this and that and the other thing better and quicker and richer, you know, or whatever, you know, being of a privileged culture or something compared to a deprived one. The outer accoutrements being connected to life better or worse is a misnomer, I think.
You know, anything that solicits and captures our attention from the point of view of, you know, culture, secular culture, spiritual culture, mutants and ordinary folks, is all, you know, of the form of a delusional streaming. We become co-conspirators with apparition, and then measure our right success and failure and entitlements and desires by virtue of, you know, dysfunctional hero and heroine worship, whether it's the Disney model or Nirsagadatta, or the living Ekmaster. You could say that it's undignifying in that if I'm beholding to imagery, I'm secondhand. I don't have a prayer to, let's just say, inhabit in some curious way my own inherent divinity, my own inherent autonomy of not self, because I'm a worshiper of someone else, something else. And I'm back, therefore, within the, you know, the boundary field, the psychic and identifying boundary field of the person. I mean, if we have an argument because you believe in Course in Miracles and I believe in the Pali Canon, or you've read Rupert Spira and I've read Alfred E. Newman, what are we doing? You know, in engaging in, you know, a hysterical form of chess. And yet so much, you know, conflict and consternation on the, you know, world scale.
Seems like the shell takes a life of its own, but it's not a true life. It ends up causing problems like superior, inferior, it's happening over here, what's wrong with you, et cetera, et cetera. Qualifications. You're not worthy. But only say the word and I shall be healed. If you're Catholic, you'll know exactly where that came from.
Well, there you go. I mean, we're duped by every, you know, major and minor world religion. I mean, like the, you know, NXVVM cult, you know, having someone's initials carved into your pubic region, you know, as a form of, you know, management consulting.
Oh, boy.
I, you know, all I can say is I'm sorry, but it goes, I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. You know, you're in a group of people for whatever reason, a business meeting, a church meeting, you know, a community, right? Community meeting. And you can feel the, right, the pressure and the tension of everyone's spoken and unspoken agenda for tribal participation, for being validated and valued, you know, by their peers, by having influence. You know, a word spoken, a project that becomes prioritized. But this is how humans, you know, function. We outwit, outsmart, outpower, outcharm each other. So a, you know, a conversation an adventure that celebrates and worships and enjoys unconditioned autonomy, unadorned being. That's a different ballgame. You know, even a sincere, non-dual, right, meeting of some kind that encourages process and method, progress, can only be relevant to the still present apparition of being the person.
Which creates a dual.
Which reinforces, necessarily, the myth of you're being a product of something. You're being downstream of the Big Bang.
But the aspirin is something solid, and the destination is something that's solid. And the two, once they meet, you have something, really have something more than this.
Yes, the, you know, the motive to seek to inhabit a more pleasing condition with whatever you value. I mean, it could be, you know, your car is shinier than your neighbor's, or, you know, your ham radio antenna is 20 feet higher. You know, your clothing has got whiter whites and brighter brights. Or all of the light bulbs in your house are LEDs. You drive a Leaf, and therefore you're contributing to reduced carbon emissions. Oh. And these are the things that, you know, interest us. Right? The trivialities of consumerist relationship with living. You know, to be popular amongst, you know, spiritual audiences, you have to give them what they want. If you don't give them what they want, well, it's going to be a short career or unlaunched, perpetually unlaunched, let alone short.
It's like the followers of any so-called savant, Picasso, making something and someone saying, and everyone around him saying, "That's freaking great, make more of those." And he goes, "What?" And he goes on to the next one. You know, he doesn't listen to them. "Oh, that's even better, make more of those." "What? Leave me alone." As opposed to satisfying the masses with more of saying, kind of suggests that there's something absolutely original, which doesn't necessarily have to stand out.
Well, yes.
It's fresh, though. It's fresh. It's not
regurgitated
or repeated or Xeroxed, you might say.
Present experiences, right, and unpatterned chaos. Which, you know, through magical intervention, we pattern to make it familiar, you know, digestible, manageable, controllable, derivable, influenceable. Right? One of the skills of mind, whatever mind is, without much effort at all, is to completely ignore the chaos of actual present experience and selectively, though unconsciously or semi-consciously, pick out enough elements from the streaming nature of experience to continue to reinforce the myth of myself. To call that into question, to blasphemy. Even to emphasize or reinforce that view, you know, in a Tony Parsons meeting is blasphemy. Paul Hederman does a great job of being the truth and telling lies. If he got, you know, more serious about the obliterative nature of present experience and stopped pandering to, you know, people in recovery, he wouldn't be making a living anymore. Bless his heart.
I wonder if there is something in us that wants to connect and will conform to a degree, like, well, if I speak the same language or if I use the right phraseology, attention will be tweaked. And, you know, the encounter will be richer. As opposed to one of the only that speak in tongues, and no one has a clue what you're doing, flailing in the air, and what noises are coming out. But you do. You know, what is that impulse that wants to belong, wants to be part of? But then there's a mistaken some identity of sorts. It's occurring to me now. With this self that feels separate and then has an impulse to do something, to connect, as opposed to maybe it's just happening quite naturally, not because it has to, or because it should, or because it must, or because that's what your ancestors did.
Well, you know,
or your spiritual group.
If we're in a because loop, sooner than later, we'll settle on some kind of satisfying explanation. It's terrifying that this is this, and there's no because. It's liberating that this is this, and there's no because.
So the order that we might observe, like, all the chairs lined up, clean room, you know, a facility is reinforced by other minds and people that have a drive.
Well, you know, it's a clean
order out of chaos.
Yes, it's a clean room from one scale. But grab a magnifying glass and look at that couch that you're sitting on.
Right.
And, you know,
that's right.
It should be burned immediately.
Yeah, that's not... Let's just think harmony.
Yeah.
But
the point is not necessarily to, you know,
right,
bring attention to how many creatures are living in every square inch of my skin, but to point out it's about scale. How do we create the imagination of a life lived through the unconscious selection of certain events and circumstances and sentiments that reinforce the nature of what it is we feel and believe? It's all about scale.
Yeah. Then we have human institutions.
Well, of course.
And a whole structure of participation.
I mean, looking at your body from, you know, the top of a 200-foot redwood, you become, right, so inconsequential, hardly noticeable. You know, go a little further up and forget about it. And yet, again, according to scale, which is the one way of thinking of, you know, scale is, you know, the five sense windows are, you know, kind of around here, right, at the surface and periphery of what we call the body. So the scale looks out from, right, the scale of the body.
Right.
And so our consciousness is, in a sense, profoundly
way scaled down
or biased. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, this scale is much different than the scale of an ant, mm-hmm. and we don't dwell there.
Right.
And this scale is very different than the scale of
right.
an elephant or a blue whale.
Like one of our steps could be genocide for the tiny creatures.
One of Wayne's favorite jokes was, you know, the guy that heals AIDS has committed genocide to the AIDS virus.
We're just trying to make a living.
So?
So we kill a host now and then.
Yeah. Now, within the arbitrariness of scale associated with, let's just call the, you know, our physicality, as a, you know, human being walking on terra firma. From that vantage point, our architecture is the scale, right? I mean, even our rocket ships that, you know, go to Mars are to scale. Our, you know, dams and even huge machines or tiny nanomachines are all to scale. Our political systems, our secular and spiritual systems are all to scale. They all, you know, they're not comprehensive. A lot of our, you could say, frustration might have to do with an instinct that we're not who we take ourselves to be, that what we call reality is not what reality is. And yet, we dwell within the confines and the familiarity of scale, often unhappily, when you see how many people are divorced or on antidepressant meds, or how many people, you know, exploit others. It's like, doesn't seem like there's a lot of happiness, even though what we hear about, you know, through the so-called news, are, right, exaggerated events. Right, most of the 7-point-something billion people wouldn't mind playing cards, having a cigarette, going to the office, raising some kids, and not bothering anybody. You know, quiet enjoyment. Not everyone is interested in being a megalomaniac. And yet we have agreed somehow to be ruled by a very small, ridiculously small number of megalomaniacs without consequence.
Until
a dam breaks.
Yeah, enough get the notion that if they emulate or repeat this, the chaos theory will turn much quicker.
We've seen it.
That grounded being. It's like, yes, you've just quickened things, trying to multiply. So you want to be a millionaire, or you suddenly become desirable, materially desirable, so you have to have anyone you're interested in sign an agreement that it's a consensual relationship.
Sure.
Or else, yeah. What do you mean by that? So complication doesn't come from chaos. It comes from trying to make order out of chaos, it seems.
It was a lovely insight.
You know, and the more demanding of a certain orderliness we become, the more kind of like wacky it gets.
There's a fee for imposing order on a system that's actually chaotic.
Oh my God, I just saw Metropolis last night too. I don't know if you remember that movie. It's unbelievable how they get a large group of people to move together as this uniform, you know, marching, you know, kind of unconsciously as a large body in creating what for who. Of course, all hell breaks loose. And
that's what we have. All hell breaks
inevitably
loose.
Inevitably wants to, you know, even the grand creator wanted it to fall apart, didn't realize the consequences of how far it could fall apart. And it's like, what is it that I'm so concerned about, in say my own small world, about a certain degree of rejection someone care about it, whatever. It's like, how does that get so freaking big and so occupying of time? Maybe I need to climb the big redwood tree and look at myself from up there and go, you fussing over that? See that? You fussing over that?
You know, it's a fun lesson, let's say. Let's say you climb, you know, the proverbial redwood tree. You look down upon, you know, your former scale or position, and you're overwhelmed, right, by the new perspective. And within, you know, minutes, your place in the redwood tree is going to become local again. Right? The power, the influence of perception, and perceptual context and perceptual content will once again, you know, attempt and likely be successful on placing you or myself again in right
the position,
yeah,
the thing you're observing. Yes.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
The scale.
Yeah.
That's right. When climbing and you're not anywhere but where you are, there's a certain calmness. But as soon as you look, you go, oh shit, I'm one step from annihilation or whatever. Or oh shit, I'm so
well, even if you're not, even if you're not threatened, you know, here's this consciousness, whatever it is right here. And if I mean, because the visual field is so defining, if I close my eyes, right, I can get a moment's, let's say, relief from the implication of the visual field. And if I don't recall, you know, where I think I am or who I think I'm with and how I got here or why, well, whoa. I mean, instantaneously, I don't know where I am.
That's what, one of the things I love about meditation.
Okay. Is, yeah.
That I wouldn't say disorientation, but just a non-specific presence.
Now you're getting somewhere, not that you weren't a moment ago.
No, I mean, in language it's funny.
But here, you know, here this is non-specific. I mean, the fact of it is non-specific. The hubris and presumption that we glean, that we might call specificity, is imagined, is projected. We're always transcendently non-specific. I would say that is a keen, worthwhile textural observation to have. Present experience is outrageously non-specific. Now, right, the challenge worth accepting for the yogi is to cultivate non-specificity through meditation and, you know, other tools. Tea ceremonies don't hurt. You know, curried cabbage and ribeye is good. To cultivate and become accustomed to non-specificity. That's a portal and gleeful destination. And here it is. This is that. This is this. Non-specificity. Unadorned non-specificity in the midst of, right, profound demonstration of sensuality and senses and imagination and scale. We become violent, A, because we just love to, through, you could say, the vehicle of scale. Non-specificity is not violent. Non-specificity has nothing to defend.
Violence needs some kind of an object, or it appears to be a force imposing itself on another force or form and force. To then something that sees the folly, but hopefully it doesn't get so smart it thinks it's cleverer than it all. See how quickly that self comes back. It's so funny. Yeah, I think I'm onto something. Oh, there I am. Just fell out of the tree onto myself at the bottom.
That's right. Your 200 foot high self just flattened.
Flattened by
your
observed
6 foot high self. Yeah. That's right. Crushed in an instant.
The connection between this anxiety or this angst or unsettledness it doesn't have legs as soon as I don't finish that sentence with the It already left me. I freed myself before I could tie myself up.
Well, there you go. Welcome to the Night Sky Sangha.
Aye, aye, aye. Like someone you love that says, and you're talking about something entirely different, problem solving a mechanical issue, and then all of a sudden the message is, I'm very sad. It's like, okay, now what? Is it connected to this, or is it connected to that? Is it connected to me? What do I do? What do I say? You know, and that compulsion. I'm speaking about it because something like that just grabbed me a couple hours ago.
Sure. There's landmines everywhere.
And it's like, I don't even know what it means, but I'm assuming I do. Or wondering.
One's sense of self is assumed into being.
That's it. Yep.
Non-specificity, which is non-violent, rapturous, celebratory, worshipful, becomes violating upon the demonstration of specificity. And this, of course, is, you know, involuntary. You know, a salon like this one for fun, you know, has kind of a singular purpose, if it has one at all. That purpose is a direct, palpable encounter with non-specificity. The erasure of the momentum the importance, the implication of self.
It's like a mind massage. The widget channels and ways that it thinks, coming to the same places, producing the same types of course, sameness is obviously can't be proved, but let's put it this way, not fresh. That the invitation to penetrate into the phenomenon without really needing to change it, but just not taking it for face value in a sense. Not entertaining it from the big blocks that you've been shuffling around on the table, trying to orient those blocks to spell out what it is that you want to conclude.
Yes.
So you can then be at peace.
Well, those, again, are, you know, poetic references to, right, the movement and machine of mind. They're not relevant at all any longer. You know, in the heart of non-specificity, there's no more strategizing going on.
Yeah, there's a strong part of me that likes to find words and paraphrase or look at something and then communicate it back.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's how we get through school.
I guess I haven't graduated yet.
Well, I'm still working on it. From a bias, one bias point of view, sensuality of being is irrefutable. But the meaning and the purpose and the genesis and the implication, that's contrived. Whatever awareness is, thankfully, it's nothing. Senses, the subtle sensuality of presence without narrative. As that capacity matures or ripens, good luck having anything to say about anything.
Yeah, I'm seeing right now the folly of comparing a self of 5 years ago to a wiser one now.
Mm-hmm.
In expounding or making some sort of a view or a point or a contrast.
Sure. It's a one-man theatrical presentation, which is all I ever do. Yeah, any contrast or comparison is, you know, pitting one idea against another to come up with the contrast and the qualities and the demonstration and the evidence, which again is, you know, a certainly welcome, harmless most of the time, distraction from non-specificity.
I guess even the cleverness of some of those Buddhist teachings where you go from the obvious and easy referential to non-referential, and you still have somewhat of a stickiness. And then you have that in between that's almost there mixed with pure. And then before you know it, you're further up. It's still very complicated and layered with.
Very complicated. They should rename it Ooh-dist rather than Buddhist. It's an Ooh-dist.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
God. And my.
Ooh, this is such bullshit-ist.
My complicated mind just soaked it up at one stage.
I was there, yes.
It occupied this impulse for intricate complexity and resolving complexity over and over again. You know.
Anyone likes a good puzzle.
Yeah. The three connected circles and then... all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But and then just being speechless when a child says something that's profound and in the moment, and then go, geez, they've got something much more present than I do in my busyness, in the busyness. But even so, I just caught the split of comparison that's another layer back from that observation. Can't really get away from it, it seems.
Well.
Or I won't say in general, I'll say this current experience of mine. It's so easy to...
The yogic instruction is always go to the feeling tone of present experience, not the narration. Don't allow the discursive mind to hijack your attention. There's so, let's say, much more that's present than having to remain imprisoned by the discursive mind.
Like King Herod saying, prove to me. And you live. No.
Yeah, right.
No.
Yes, he was given ample opportunity to circumvent his time on the cross and would not, could not.
It's a good thing, because there wouldn't have been much of a message otherwise. It would be, oh, to get yourself out of a bind...
Lie.
Prove something materially in form. Perform a miracle. And,
yes. Well, know. Despite the sacrifice that he made, metaphorically, allegorically, or in flesh, we're still fucked.
If we're identified, yeah.
Yeah.
If we're trying to preserve, you know, our heritage of continuity. I mean, that's one thing that early on in these discussions, that something inside, I didn't now outwardly refer to it, but that when you say there is no continuity, or nothing is happening, and it's like, oh, come on. But another part of me sort of knew and was willing to just roll with it. And... go into the place where you take off your body.
Sure.
To get in. I don't know. Sounds weird, but
not to me.
It's almost like you go through the portal, and you don't even have bones. You don't have cells. You don't have nothing.
You don't.
You don't have a center.
No.
Or a periphery.
No.
It's like, welcome to, and then nothing's there. Nothing. Nothing that can be spoken. Oh, boy.
We can use the word intimacy to illustrate proximity. And using the word proximity, of course, is, you know, not so easy to do, because proximal to what? The discursive mind can only thrive when it's distant from presence. If attention were to discover proximity, intimacy, just now, just this, the discursive mind won't function, or function differently, because we're still speaking.
Yeah, it's more of a servant than it is a driving, masterful force, or a agenda generator.
Right. Yes. Identity is not being outgassed from the discursive mind. Identity is empty. That's the salon. Have the salon. Frolic in non-specificity. Let it gain on you. Discover without hypnosis or manipulation. Discover without influence. That identity is empty. That doesn't mean you want to tell everyone at Circle of Miracles all about it.
It's funny. I'm like,
exactly. That's right. Uh huh.
Damn.
Thanks for having me speak. I really enjoyed meeting all you sweet folks. I'm gonna hi, bido. All right.
Oh,
great talk. Yeah, that was fantastic.
feel this.
These are not the drones you're looking for.
Oh, boy. It's funny, this thought's coming back to me that periodically called tap this rich vein, and it's so palatable, it's like, and you see how it can affect presence in such a way. And then my prayer was, how can I be invisible in that? You know, so there was a battle between an element of self that really wants the attention.
Oh, my.
And one that says, no, it'll be another hero worship bullshit thing. It's like, it's not about the one aware. It's the thing itself that's freely available.
Let's say I'm a new age guy. You know, I know how to do Reiki, yoga. I can, you know, speak breathfully into a microphone. I can do guided meditations and shit. You know, what do I really want? Right? The pleasure of attention? The pleasure of being, you know, medicinally influential over other people? Affection? Intimacy? Consensual? You know? So sure, right? The hunger for being noticed, secure, loved, strong, of course, right? Biologically and otherwise.
And then seeing the folly and wanting the opposite, which means still hooked right into it.
Hook, hook, hook.
Hooked right into it.
Hook, and hooked again.
Yeah. Rather than saying, well, I do have an egomaniacal side.
Right.
It's winning right now.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. And the race is on.
Ain't fooled nobody, not even myself.
And here comes heartache. And the winner loses all. Uh-huh.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're playing around, right, in a, I like to refer to it as a shamanic field, a Gnostic field, where we're exploring the nature of nourishment, discovering whether a transtemporal quality of nourishment is possible. And if so, if it's possible, to wallow in it a while from time to time and see how it might complement or unseat the security seeking that is so, right, attached to the person.
Right. Once certain conditions are satisfied, I will know, fill in the blank.
Yeah.
That I have arrived, or that peace has been achieved, or that full awakening has been whatever, or that I am now qualified to go out.
Yes.
And initiate others in the same
qualification. Yes. Initiation.
Form.
Absolutely. Yes.
Manner of such action.
Uh-huh. You know, all of which is fine. It has to be fine. You know, the pressure that one places on oneself as concerns a journey into the Course in Miracles becomes just another surreptitious form of egotism, trying to rid oneself of egotism. or convince others of the progress I've made on the road to being agreeable to everything.
Yes, being agreeable to everything is being worthy to be called a liar.
Good t-shirt.
Because when the manager up there was, he said with such glee, "You're a liar." I think I told him that, "Why don't you just fuck off?" You know, it was like, you know, it's true.
Yep.
It really didn't sting because it was like,
it's so true.
It was so, it was like, yeah, I can't always be smiling. I can't always be pleasant.
Yeah.
And actually reflect this incredible presence and what it offers. Sometimes it's,
yeah,
it, you can't help it. You want to growl or dissonate.
Oh, sure.
When it comes to making sound. Or
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Bite somebody's leg off.
Oh boy. Wow. Ah. I sit with some feelings like these. The lead one will want to take drugs.
That's a great idea.
What is that doobie, man?
Doobie, doobie, doo.
That fellow asked me, he goes, "I gave you that 8 months ago. You still have it?" I said, "Yeah, it's in one of my books, I think."
Mm-hmm.
Latin.
Yeah. Well, flat doobie can only be smoked by Flat Stanley.
But you're going to be in for a two-dimensional experience.
That's right. That's all you're going to get out of a flat doobie is a two-dimensional experience.
Oh, my God.
Presence of being of presence, two words that don't mean anything really at all, nothing can. But still, you know, the yogic arc is not necessarily about, you know, ecstatic or sensational experience. Can we cope with a firsthand, intimate relationship with non-specific euphoria? We think we want love and peace and all kinds of, you know, emotional, somatic, or sentimental, spiritual goodies. But like you were called, we're all liars. It's not so simple. It's not so easy to cultivate and rest in non-specific euphoria. To find oneself free from what's not happening. Instead, we manifest metaphor, path, disappointment, longing, impossibility, right? 1,001 distractions from the fact of non-specificity. That's how the mirage of self claims itself into being. This has nothing to do with the nature and quality of meditation practice or the nature and quality of, you know, mindfulness, vipassana, noting. One's fundamental, primary nature is non-specific, without context or content. And it is that way presently. Not after a 3-year retreat in a cave where all you think about is steak and the genitals of the gender you're fond of.
That sounds like a good day. What do you call it? Or 17-syllable things. Steak and genitals.
I'll have the steak and genitals, please. I think I'll go with pink in the middle.
Oh, man, we're off the rails.
Sure.
Oh, my God. Spring is sprung.
Sure.
Like an invitation from this familiar groove that we do so frequently and often to, maybe jump. The needle just jump right out of the groove there.
Well, the salon is, you know, if it's going to be valuable, or you have some utility, it can't merely be a, you know, philosophical excursion.
That's right. There's no way, there's no clever way out of this, is there?
I don't think so. No, I haven't found one. And I'm still looking.
Okay.
You know, nothing is nothing. Everything is everything. A thing is not a thing. Of course it is.
Right.
What?
That's the chaos core of sorts.
Sure.
Life doesn't discriminate. It can animate anything.
And has. Then likely will continue to do so. You know.
Make a flower smell beautiful or poo. Fill the room.
Yeah.
Is equally with olfactory presences.
I mean, the last thing you want, though few would admit it, is, you know, to continue to be yourself, to be confined to the imagination of yourself.
I Clink glances to that. Oh, yeah. Here you go. The opposite of getting a certificate of achievement.
That's right.
I like that guy. Oh, my God. He went to see every psychic that would tune into his past lives, and his little house was full of pictures of his past lives.
Oh?
And there was all these amazing and incredible beings.
Uh-huh.
I said, that's really something. What are you in this life? I'm a writer. Kind of a frumpy.
Yeah.
Introverted.
Right.
Wow, you really changed it up.
Yeah, didn't you?
I don't see that.
Used to be somebody. Now look at you.
I don't see that one on the wall.
Yeah, oops.
Oh, my God. It's the complementary side to it. It's like the one who claims this presence and profundity and thinks it's the influencer going, oh, I don't want to be noticed.
Yeah.
I don't want anyone to worship me, so let me be invisible. The error is still there.
No, sure.
That it's mine. And that I can evoke it, condition it, amplify it, impart it.
Yeah.
Transmission it.
The only thing consciousness knows how to do or what to do is to make claims. So it may as well, you know.
Oh, boy.
Consciousness without claim is what exactly?
Free.
It certainly is not a room full of adoring photographs of who you were in a prior life. Right. Though it could be.
Oh, my God. That's such a...
Here this is. Here this is. What is it without claim? That is the correct answer. I don't know. Correct.
Right. The open door.
I don't know what this is without claim.
Because as soon as there's a grasping, the instruments of grasping are already coloring it in such a way that it is not. It's just a momentary movement of digits of sorts.
You're just moving the gates around. It's a one or a zero. You're a gate manager.
Yeah, do it again. How is it that a purple bear made it to the nonfiction section?
Snuck in. Must have snuck in.
He's like...
Yeah.
Got anybody tuned in there? I have no idea what we're talking about.
There's a few viewers there. There's a few viewers, they must have some sense of what we're talking about. Or that, or they're asleep. And they've gone to make dinner and just left the YouTube rolling. Which is good, too. One thing I don't have to worry about, and that's becoming popular. Could you imagine sitting, you know, on a folding chair in Carnegie Hall or Felt Forum or whatever, and having just a microphone and speaking to an assembly of, right, thousands of people about this stuff, I'd wet myself.
Well, today I described it with Tom. Suppose we're spiders and we're caught up in our own web. Just couldn't help it, you know. We're just like stuck in our own way. And we go to a place and get unwound. And I said, that's like inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't help it. I just get myself all tied up. It's like, is it different? No, it's not different, really. It's just going from tied up to loosening some of those sticky threads. Let me in a bunch.
You know, we can say that it appears that the habit of whatever consciousness is right toward specificity, locality, scale, context, agreeable and disagreeable, mental notation. At least in, you know, whatever we call the human being, the preponderance of evidence, if there were any, seems to point in that direction.
Yeah, the one who keeps showing up.
Yes. Yeah.
Has a certain tone of voice. And
yes.
Responds to a particular name.
So it's both, you know, joyful and intimidating to shift electron orbits, to add more energy to the system so the electron can
jump.
Skip, right? Jump.
Yeah.
To a different orbital relationship around the chaos of the proton. I mean, even in, right, so-called contemporary, whatever contemporary means these days, everything's changing so blindingly, whizzingly fast. Right, but the, you know, the nature of the proton, the nucleus, is not of time. It's not of space. It's as if the, you know, subtle magnetism of the electron, you could say as a, right, metaphor for awareness, orbiting the chaos field of the proton, suggests context.
What suggests context?
Perhaps the centrifugal force of the electron, right, in an elliptical relationship to the proton.
Because in a sense, that is an orientation.
Yes.
A very strong, what they call it, a balance bond.
Yes, yes.
Very strong orientation.
Very strong. Yeah.
Hmm.
Except, of course, in, you know, unstable elements where it's not strong. So our orientation, right, philosophically, spiritually, and in other respects, follows a certain kind of elliptical, right, familiarity, and the salon is, you know, perhaps one vehicle to alter the orbit.
I see the distinction between the referencing that I frequent as a, like, say, a tangled self to an untangled self.
Right.
Versus exploring the field.
Yes.
Without that specific reference per se, that's still strongly tethered to the, to an identity, and go, there's a lot in the room. And that's just one element, perhaps, or not.
Mm. you know, the cutting edge, the leading edge, like where the bow of the boat, the bow's the front?
Yeah.
Yes, the bow of the boat cuts the water, right? It's a profound, right, proximity, a profound intimacy, mm-hmm. a point of irrefutable, you know, magical contact, mm-hmm. where the bow cuts the water, just there. This. And just like the boat in motion, you know, can appear and feel and sense motion, right? The continuity of this cutting, the real, right, curious, transcendental heart of the matter is right there at the, right, the cutting of the water, right there. And yet it seems to persist, right, in time, space, motion, and distance. But not really, because it doesn't anticipate the next molecule, and it doesn't recall the former. So it only thrives, if you will, right at the cutting. There is nothing else. That might be true of us. As a matter of fact, it is true of us. This is just the cutting of the water. The interface is exactly only present and has no duration. It has no recall of itself, and it has no anticipation of the imagination of a future.
It's really a matter of a shift in view of sorts. I know it's metaphorical.
It could be a shift. It could be a collapse, because it really has no view. There is no view where the bow of the boat meets the water. There's no view. It's complete. It's absolute, as is this moment. A view already takes us too far distant.
It's someone on the boat, right? Or the boat in the ocean.
Yes. Yes.
Or the bow. Forget the stern.
Okay.
Although it's always following.
Apparently so. But you see how quickly and miraculously a, you know, cogent, believable, frameable, evidentiary sense of orientation as context and content arises in mind as a referential system, as an anecdotal celebration, which contributes to the right sense of past, present, and future continuity. But only apparitionally.
Yeah. The investment starts to build again.
Yes.
From that captain's chair, whatever it is that you're riding.
Yes.
Doctor, the driver,
the euphoria, the salve, the enzyme of euphoria, presently noticed, presently felt, immersive, non-specific euphoria. Collapses the myth of continuity. And even, you know, using the word euphoria is not quite accurate, is it? But it's good. You know, here's this plasma of indescribable proximity, indescribable intimacy, non-subject, non-object.
The muscles relax, you know. Yeah.
The diaphragm relaxes and the sphincters relax and the chakras relax and the nadis relax. Subos relax. So, right, you don't need to pile reference upon reference to make the point where the bow cuts the water is all there is.
Phone call I need to make soon. So.
Sure.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks for stopping by.
They say where there's two or more gathered, chaos is bound to amplify.
Maybe that's why the bear is here.
Yes. So we can bear each other's company.
That's right.
Yeah, we got a red bear and we got purple bear. Books. Remotely charged phone. This game 40% with this little guy.
That's great.
Like he used his he gave of himself fully.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. You know, there was a live organist that played during the showing of Metropolis.
Oh.
It was pretty...
Where'd you see it?
Pretty cool. At the county.
Oh, and they had a live organ there?
7 p.m., yeah. The fellow couldn't have been over 22.
Nice.
And his younger brother was at the percussion.
That's great.
Man, the stamina to get through a full two-length
sure.
silent film.
Yeah.
Pretty astounding. Man, it was just epic.
Thanks, everyone. I guess we'll be folding up. Appreciate your being here. See you next time.
Bye.